Welcome to the PTMA podcast. Today is the second part of a two-part series with the training company CAWS with their COVID rehabilitation course. This time round, we have Mel back on with us, which has been great, and also Dr. Cole. And we talk this time more about the intricacies about what the course does, the effects of COVID and long COVID on our clients, how to assess and how to start to implement a really robust training program to really support the clients coming back from this virus. Hopefully you'll take a lot from today. If there's any questions, please feel free to post them into the email address on the show notes, or there is a link where you can ask a question. If we can't answer, then we'll pass that on to Mel and Dr. Cole, and we will feedback through one of the Q&As in the coming weeks. Thanks, guys. Right. Let me get... There we all are. Can see everyone. Right, afternoon, Pure Gym PT, because there's only one person watching at the moment. I'm sure it'll build up. We'll give it a few minutes. But as promised last week, I think it was last week when we had Mel on. We've been joined this week by Cole, who I'll let him introduce himself. He'll do a far better job than I will. Second, so a bit of a follow-on from last week. Obviously we introduced CAWS, Mel, what these guys are, the work these guys are doing in the industry at the moment, and this is just to get into a little bit more depth on directly how this can help trainers in the current situation. We've got a bunch of questions to kind of throw at you, mate, as well, which we're getting quite a few. Amber,
it's a very sociable group today. They're all saying
it is, isn't it? We usually have to scream and shout to get any interaction.
BT's saying hello.
What's all that about? Jeez.
So just to set the scene, any questions you guys have that are watching at the moment on working with current clients that have got COVID, got long COVID, if you've had that in the past and you're not working with them now, but you're looking to work with them in the future, any type of questions in regards to training protocols, considerations, etc., throw into the chat and we can direct them at these experts we have on for you. So welcome back, Mel.
Thanks for having me back.
And welcome, Cole. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Thanks for having us here. Yeah, thanks, Nick. Yeah,
and I'll let Cole introduce himself, give a bit of a background, what you've been working on over the last 6-7 months, I guess now.
Yeah, it kind of feels a bit longer, doesn't it? Yeah. So yeah, thanks, Nick. My name's Colin Robertson. Kind of more commonly known as Dr. Colt. I'm an exercise and nutrition scientist, really. Spend a lot of time in research more nowadays, but my kind of background goes back 25 years plus. Started as a PT, worked out in the States for a little while at the Mecca, Gold's Gym. Learned a lot whilst I was there. Learned that really, if I wanted a career out of it, I wanted to kind of move across towards more sports science. That was really consolidated. I nipped over to Florida State, got to have a look at what was going on there, came back to the UK and went right to sports science for me. And then kicked on from there, usual route, sports science degree, master's in nutrition, PhD, environmental physiology and nutrition. I was working as a clinical exercise physiologist in a big district general. So everything from cardiac, cancer, pulmonary, neurological, you name it, anything that required that kind of level of input, support and physiotherapy and those services, working across the board there. I always kind of kept a hand in with elite sport. Back then it was more kind of football and some who were on pathway for the Olympics. But then I moved back across to John Moore to take a position with them to head up their strength and condition provision. So that was working with a lot of kind of more the EIS stuff, English Institute of Sport, but then working in rugby league, rugby union, and kind of everything. With regards to my kind of specialist area, has always kind of been endurance or people going to extreme environments when it comes to sports. So I've trained a lot of people to climb Everest and row the ocean and do marathon de Sables and that kind of stuff. But I've always had a real interest in public health and clinical health. You know, I've always been fascinated with it, and largely because I always think that exercise specialists have been underrepresented in that area, because typically what happens is they'll get someone else to do a bit of it, when really that's our skill set, you know. And there is a definite point in a person's transition from being clinically defined as a patient to now recovery and rehabilitation for the long term, which is where we come into our own. That's the bit that we know better than anybody else. So because of my experience clinically, I guess, when I was made aware of COVID, which for me was December 2019, was when we started to take it seriously. And then certainly in the January, Feb, you know, the kind of colleagues of mine that work more in disaster medicine and epidemiology were all saying, brace yourself, because we're in for impact. This is coming and we're going to have to deal with it. And Mel and I had been working already on the idea of an education pathway for PTs to just to try and offer them something new and arguably something a bit more, you know, to bridge the gap between what people get when they do a degree in sports science and what you get off a level 3 or 4 when you do a vocational course. So because we'd done a bit of background work on that, and then COVID came, and I was already aware of what were likely to be the outcomes of people who'd had this virus, we then mustered. I mean, Mel was great because she was on this from the start. She recognized the case of need and thought, and literally said to me, what can we do about this that's gonna help people? What can we put in place? And it was really from that that the cause was born, was that notion of how can we muster and do something for the sector.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I think you're probably the most widely experienced people we've had on, so it's going to be a good chat.
It makes
for the warm
up. Yeah, it makes for our qualifications in Viper training and CRF feel a bit limited now, Nick.
Everything's relevant. Everything's got its place.
I don't know about tubes and Vipers.
So I guess one of the things when taking myself back when Mel gave us a shout, and I'd never actually heard of the term long COVID, really. I've had it hearing a little bit more of it now, like in mainstream media and people talking about it a little bit more. But for, I guess at the moment what PTs are kind of dealing with is that my client's got COVID, they can't train at the moment. And there's just this stopping point, a full stop on that. And I think obviously not being, unless the guys have been keeping up with, I'm sure we've all been keeping up with the news, but not the great news at the moment, but specifically how they fit into the kind of puzzle. How could you describe what long COVID is for the guys watching who really haven't kind of heard of the term or aware of potential clients that are working with or will work with in the future?
Yeah, that's where I totally agree. That's a lot of what kind of people reach out to us about is kind of a bit of a clarification on what these terms mean and what does that mean to the individual with regards to what they can do. And if I'm really honest with you, it's such a broad term, because long COVID essentially describes the fact that someone has got a kind of prolonged consequence of symptoms, things that are preventing them to go back to what they might classify as normal. And they can be anything from something like post-viral fatigue, general tiredness, even just acute daily tiredness, all the way through to increased rest and heart rate, increased perception of effort on activities of daily life, breathlessness. They might be getting some neurological symptoms. They might be getting disturbed sleeping patterns, They might have some gastric issues. That's becoming more and more of a common thing now. So the term long COVID and long haulers is actually, it's a big general term. And essentially what it says is you're no longer classically symptomatic of COVID, but you've left with these kind of varying types of symptoms in the wake of it. So there is no one cap that we go, right, that's a long COVID person. And I guess that what we've inherited is a reluctancy to do anything because we've kind of had our fingers burned by past experience. You know, someone who's, say, for instance, had cardiovascular disease and they get discharged from hospital and then they show up at a fitness facility and, you know, there's kind of like, be careful what you do because, you know, they've had a heart attack and if you do something, you might hurt them. So I think it's that. We've had that with cancer. We've had it with metabolic syndrome. You know, I think we've got a bit of a legacy of that now, and it's carrying over to COVID. So everyone's a bit stand back and going, well, what can I actually do with this person? Mm. And that's where it's a case of getting back to basics of what we do, because we can. And the sooner we start, a bit like cancer, cardiovascular type 2, the sooner we start, the better. We just need to start at the right level. And we need to start at a point that doesn't exacerbate their fatigue, because fatigue is debilitating. You can't work against it. You've got to work with fatigue. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can't go this notion of kind of conditioning them and going, well, we'll do this and we'll get tired and don't worry because that's how we get better. That's not how we overcome fatigue. We work within the parameters of what they can do and then kind of manipulate one variable at a time. So let's say, for instance, they can walk for 10 minutes. Great. We've got 10 minutes as a time on task. Next time, we won't go for longer. We might just go a little bit quicker. So we're just increasing just one aspect of the intensity. Mm-hmm. And we just take it, we take it gradually and we monitor it so that we're seeing, and literally we want to see consistent progress. That's how we overcome fatigue. No matter what type of post-viral or disease-orientated fatigue we're working with, we're looking for continued progress. It's not like other factors of what you might call more typical fitness parameters, constantly moving forward with it. Now, for anyone who's had COVID, who is a long hauler or long COVID, and that group's getting bigger, by the way, you know, a big part of it is realigning their expectations and saying, stop judging yourself on what you were doing before COVID. You know, think of it. The analogy we often use is, think of it as that you've had a fracture and now the fracture's healing. You're not going to suddenly go in the gym and start doing, you know, burpees and all kinds of crazy ballistic stuff. You're going to rehabilitate that fracture. And once you know it's strong, then you'll get back to doing what you were doing before. So the damage in this instance doesn't require surgery or doesn't require a plaster, but it's there. Recognize that it's there. Let's get restorative, rehabilitative, and then we can kick on and do all the things that we want to do further down the line.
Yeah, that's really interesting. When you were talking now, I was thinking, I'm trying to put myself in similar scenarios that I would have gone through, not with COVID, but with, you know, with people who are recovering from heart attacks or simple injuries or breaks or whatever. You know, you kind of, I guess it's within our remit to, like you say, kind of pull back completely or try and fix it with more on assumption rather than knowledge and based on no kind of diagnosis specifically from you in regards to what to do and when to do it and how to do it, you know, and there's no base point like achieved before you kind of move forward. From a PT's perspective, I guess one of the things I'm thinking of is like, right, your clients had COVID. So maybe they haven't trained for a couple of weeks or even a month or whatnot. And now they want to start to come back because, you know, there's the symptoms are subsiding quite substantially and they haven't trained in a while. I guess my question is what's your kind of take on recognizing long COVID or recognizing certain aspects of the fitness, which may be a little bit surprised when they start to get back into things? Like, how would you suggest the PTs kind of deal with that from a face value?
So do you mean how to recognize it and then how to deal with it? What would be like the signs of it? So signs of it will be things. I mean, first of all, we've got to be clear. So if someone's had, you know, 2 weeks, 21 days of some level of deconditioning, then that's going to have a consequence anyway, you know. So you're going to see slightly raised rest and heart rate, you know, compromised maximal or near maximal exercise heart rate, increased perception of effort, you know. So they're kind of normal things. I guess what you're looking at is if that seems exaggerated. And one of the key things that people, that's very common across people who are experiencing long COVID, long haulers, is acute breathlessness. So with very little demand, they're getting really out of breath and hard to control their breath. And with that, we see this real increase in heart rate. So that's quite a key sign to look at. A part of it is taking some time to do a bit of due diligence and asking them some questions, simple things. You know, once you've done some tasks around the home or work related, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're just recovering as normal, or is that taking more out of you? All of these are like kind of like subtle insights as to how that person is. As you start to lay down your marker and say, okay, we're going to start to exercise. I say this to everyone, and it's in the program we put together. Start beneath what you think they can do. Mm-hmm. One, it gives them the opportunity to succeed and feel good about themselves, because they go, They thought this is what would be taxing, and actually it was quite easy. So it's good, but also you're at zero risk of adding negatively. You know, you're not going to add a stimulus or a demand that's going to take anything from them, from a kind of pathological or viral point of view. You're just going to give the system a little bit of a stir up and a shake. And then you've got a point to refer back to. Right then, how did you feel after that? You can use Borg scale if you want to look at some kind of subjective assessment. It depends how much you can get them to monitor themselves. If they've got a smartwatch, any of that kind of stuff, really great to say to them, what I want you to do after this session is track your heart rate a little bit for me. Tell me how long it takes to get back to resting, how sensitive your resting heart rate is to just getting up and going and getting yourself a drink of water or something. Start to tell me a little bit about how your body responds after that initial session, because that's going to tell us a whole heap of stuff. Because if their inflammatory markers are up, if their body is under that level of stress, you're going to see responses all over the place. So it's good nowadays, isn't it? Because so many people have got, you know, Fitbits, Apple Watches, Samsung, whatever it is.
I'm mad on them, I am, mate. Just got another one. I'm just with them.
Smartwatches, aren't you?
Smartwatches and a Whoop. I got it's all sorts.
I like it though. I like it. I mean, there's limitations. Some people think, you know, it tells them absolutely everything. I'm still, as someone who spends a long time researching sleep and heart rate variability, I've got some questions over those metrics. But some of the other stuff, I mean, particularly with regards to heart rate and those kind of things and heart rate range, brilliant. I think they're great. You know, it's kind of what we dreamt of 20 years ago. You know, it would have been a dream. I did a bit of a digression here. I was a part of a huge kind of health study across North Wales in 2001, 2002. And we were giving out these naff little accelerometers and asking people to, like, you know, record their heart rate. God, we would have killed to have the tech that's available now, where people just can, you know, measure every single step that they've taken, you know, barometrically, altimeters, heart rate in accordance with the amount of data you can just get off people now just because they wear these things on the wrist. It's phenomenal. And I don't feel that most people make best use of them. And where I see really good practice, and some of our PTs are great at this, you know, is where they really bring into place how the wearable tech features a part of their program monitoring design, and how they, you know, increase the intensity to the demand based on how much data they can get back, and teaching people how to make use of that data on the go, you know, when they're actually doing a session. It can be really
I was just going to bring this up. Obviously, you've got guys going through and finished and completed your course now. And I've started to see them drip feed through your Instagram kind of profile of the stories that they've got, and some of them are eye-opening in a sense of, obviously I've seen Charlie's story and stuff like that, but then people who have been coaching people through this. Mel, I'll bring you in. What are the main themes that are coming back from the coaches who have qualified and are now dealing with people hands-on, like with clients who are kind of getting to the end of this kind of COVID and so on?
Themes as in what the common things that they're asking us, or common things with their clients, or a bit of both.
Just anything. I think if I'm a personal trainer sat here, I'm thinking, right, obviously it's going to be great for me to be more aware. It's going to be great for me to feel more confident, because I'm probably going to get more and more inquiries of more and more people who have had it, and it's alerted them to come in and do X, Y, and Z and so on. Like, any feedback that the coaches have got of how they've dealt with these people, and any types of feedback, really.
Got you. Chris, let's start with Chris, who's our very first ever Rebuild grad, who I mentioned to you earlier today, as probably would be a good person to share experiences with the guys. Chris has got a real collection of COVID clients now, some that live locally to him, but some that are spread across the country that we've passed on to him, that are people that have reached out to us and stuff. The scenarios of his clients, when Cole talked before about that spectrum, which is what makes it so hard to define long COVID, Chris has got, and actually just as a small side note, every single person that Chris works with all have a history of training, in some instances competitively. I've all worked with trainers before, albeit not Chris before, because he's kind of come in with this specialty to support other coaches, etc. in this instance. But they range from cough and cold and like mild symptoms through to potential, without being scaremongery with this, just to add that onto this, through to potential like long-term heart issues, through to another human potential long-term lung issues, through to POTS syndrome, right the way through to a relatively young dude, endurance athlete, I think I said this to you guys before, cycling into work, fainting on his commute into work, ad hoc sickness if he's pushed himself too far doing the daily tasks that Cole's mentioned before. So at this point, so far as, and that isolated to Chris, all the guys, every single individual story is different, as would be the case with any clients that the guys are working with. It's obviously just exacerbated in this situation. Now, ordinarily, you're going to hear heart damage, lung damage, and think, Jesus Christ, that sounds complex, and potentially like a bit fearful to get hands-on with. But as Cole said before, what we're trying to do, and a lot of work we're trying to do, is break all that fear down, simplify it, bring it right down to a slow pace, so that very incrementally you can tap away and make changes with people that then prevents any of those symptoms or problems escalating, and starts to remedy them instead. So that kind of, whatever they're faced with, they're adopting the same principles, and like very proudly happy to say that they're all very confidently getting stuck in. And of course, I mean, Cole's received quite a few questions this week, haven't you, where people are bouncing back and throwing stuff at us, and that's partly what we're here for. Other themes, we've definitely gotten busier. The coaches have definitely had more inquiries from existing clients and members that have got COVID, of course, because the case count's gone up, so that's the thing. And we had our monthly Q&A yesterday with the Rebuild guys, and another key theme and conversation has been around adaptations that they can make to their existing business and model to make this fit, so that it's quite seamless in the other services that the guys already offer. So for example, we've got one coach who, she runs a big team of online workouts, 18 individuals dial in for like group sessions. And now around sort of 12 of the 80 have all got COVID, but they still want to work with her. She still wants to have a relationship with them. But her question and what we were talking through yesterday was, how does she adapt those sessions when she's got the COVID group in the room? So then, of course, we talk about creating a sub team for the group that has COVID, which of course then could grow into 80 people from 12, but she creates a bit more of this rehab group scenario for this separate population. So there's kind of like some learnings and some adaptation that the guys are trying to make to understand that, yeah, they might go through certification, but in real terms, how does that impact their business? Both in being able to service their existing clients, but grow the business as well. And then another thing that's come up, which also came up on the call yesterday that we loved, didn't we? Tomo, who's one of our courses in the North, who actually operates out of Cole's gym, Tomo's decided to test all his clients, COVID or not, so that he has a baseline understanding of where they're at. And then in the event that they get COVID, they then have a reference point to go, this has been the extent that COVID has created, if you get me. Yeah. So a little bit like when Cole was talking before about expectation, and Nick, you were trying to understand and kind of quantify the difference that COVID might have made on a person.
Mm.
Cole and I thought that was a great, like, awesome, great practice idea to do and kind of be really proactive against COVID. But then it's kind of straight away, it's almost like you're, again, you don't want to scaremonger everybody into thinking, oh God, we could all completely get it and everyone be rattled with that. But then it's kind of like in the event that a client gets it, they already know that you've got their back as their coach because you're well ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. So that's probably another key theme that's come up in kind of the last few weeks, if that helps a little.
Yeah, it does help a lot, because that was going to be one of my questions. Sorry, Cole, go on.
No, I was going to add to that, because I was in a clinical forum this morning that was discussing the rollout of the vaccine. And, you know, this is like global leads in it. And they were saying everyone should just assume they're going to get it. That should be the assumption. Everyone assume you're going to get it, which I found interesting. And this is from the people who are leading the strategy with the vaccine rollout. And that's right. So Chris's approach of going, well, I'll just test everyone. And then if you get it, I've got an objective marker. So never mind what you thought you were, we've got this. And then we know a percentage of how different you are now and really what we might want to work towards returning to as a level of fitness. So I thought that was good. And we do that in elite sport, really, pre-season testing is basically, let's see where you're at now and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think also just on what Mel was saying, which comes across a lot, is that most people are coming onto calls and saying their main concern is they're the one in their area and there's so many people to work with. It's overwhelming. People, you know, people, there was a PT on yesterday from Oxfordshire who was saying, listen, you know, there's a ton of people here and I'm the only one. You know, people are contacting me to work with and I'm the only one that I know of so far in this area who's qualified to do it. So the numbers are increasing. More people are going to get it. And thankfully, most people aren't going to have the worst, most severe symptoms, but are going to need support with their recovery.
Yeah.
And we weren't expecting that to be like a concern from a coach that I'm kind of overrun, if you like.
Yeah, well, we chatted through that, God, probably 2 months ago, wasn't it? When we started to talk about people coming on the course and PTs who were doing it in certain areas where I had spikes and stuff like that. Just going back to the testing bit, because this is something that I wanted to ask at the start, was if a personal trainer, obviously now we absolutely recommend them to come onto the course and get the course done for more than just this testing side of it. But what types of, you mentioned the walking thing before, how to measure heart rate off the back of it, how to measure the recovery off the back of it, looking at manipulating the variables around that. Is there any other advice of a kind of a testing process that they could be aware of now, just in case they do start to get a couple more people within their business currently?
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind, you're asking that from a sports scientist. We go to town on testing everything. So I have to hold myself back so that it's, you know, we're not treating people like lab rats. Yeah. So yeah, but I think it's always best practice that you've got an understanding of any client with regards to their exercise tolerance capacity, their functional ability and capacity, and their strength. And it's how we can modify to that those three parameters to fit the populations that we're working with. And again, back to brass tacks, you know, if you haven't got good function, then you shouldn't really be focused on increasing the external load against the movement that's poor. So movement accuracy and function is at the heart of everything we do. You know, people don't get running injuries. They get running badly injuries. That's what happens. They run badly and then they pick up an injury. Good runners don't get running injuries. People who can move well in the gym don't get training injuries because they can move well in the gym. Do you know what I mean? So it's going from that point of view, and that aligns itself to the test. So what we've done within the program is give examples within groups of how you can modify a functional assessment, a strength assessment, to keep it meaningful and then be able to, for it to be sensitive to change over time. And really, I always think with coaching, you know, a good PT, a good coach magnifies the experience by 10. So if the progress I'd expect to make on my own with a good PT should be times 10 with regards to consistency, quality, and assurance, you know, that we're definitely going to get there because you've got that objective eye. And that comes down to how well we monitor things and how sensitive we are to seeing that progress and being able to increase demand where it's appropriate. So anyone now, you know, before you've even done or even considered, and you might never consider doing the course, but anyone now who's facing someone who's coming back from having COVID, what you assess to begin with is going to determine your success overall. Exercise capacity is vital. I've said this numerous times because it used to drive me mad. You know those online gurus who go like, you know, pointless cardio.
You can swear a little, it's all right.
those like bloody self-serving gurus are like pointless cardio and just do like 5 million squats. Well, COVID's come around and called you out, hasn't it? Because the poor aerobic tolerance makes you more vulnerable, and COVID doesn't care how good your squats are or how big your back is. But you know what? As a human, a fundamental requirement is aerobic capacity. Who'd have guessed, given the fact that we all need to breathe, and the minute we increase demand, we need to breathe more. Isn't it mind-boggling that system needs to be more efficient? So that's what, you know, should be the primary, is like to develop that exercise tolerance. Movement and strength. And there'll be a lot of guys, girls listening to this who've got go-to methods to measure those things. Just make it relevant to the population. We can't be asking people to work maximally. Mm. The functional task should be functional enough that you can see articulation around multiple joints and assess that quality of control and movement, and then add some resistance to that. How do they cope? How does their posture hold up when you increase the external resistance? These are all the things to look at, aren't they?
Okay, bro. We've got a question, and I feel like we need to ask it before we go into any of the questions that we've got. Joanna, have you seen many people coming to your PTs who were already clinically vulnerable and have now had COVID, and how does that affect your ways of working with them, and how have the PTs dealt with it?
Yeah, we have. And funnily enough, just in the last couple of weeks, I've been brought onto the Advanced Clinical Practice group as a part of Health Education England with regards to addressing this need of raising education understanding across physiotherapists, occupational therapists, and it's going to come across to PTs as well with dealing with people with comorbidities, because it does make it more complicated. If you had type 2 diabetes and you got COVID, it's a more complicated situation. It is, that's a fact. Likewise with cancer, cardiovascular disease, you name it, overweight, obesity. So yeah, that has happened. And in fact, you know, Mel and I have conversations. There's three course coaches at the moment who one each have got really complicated clients, really complex clients. And they've had to, quite understandably, reach out to us more and get some kind of clarification and assurance around what it is that they intend to do with those individuals. The minute it's a comorbidity scenario, you've got to, first of all, here's how I'd address it. First of all, treat the comorbidity. So if somebody was diabetic, got COVID, okay. So first of all, we consider all those factors around the diabetes, and then we look at the impact of COVID-19 and what that does. Likewise, whatever the context is. Still don't be alarmed, because the fact is it's looking for what you can do. And I think a big problem with some of the courses that have been delivered previously is they've terrified coaches to not do anything. They've gone, here's how complex it is. And God forbid you get them to do anything. You know, so just realize they're sitting up and down on a chair is enough. We've taken a different approach, which is to go, yeah, look at all these things, contraindications. Here's what you can do. Here's the point that you can engage, and here's the difference that you can make, and start to build a ramp out. So yeah, if someone's got multiple conditions, it is more complex. So first of all, do your due diligence on the condition, and then consider those COVID-19 factors.
I think as well, some of the guys that have the complex scenarios, they love that shit. Do you know what I mean? They're the sort of characters who I was on with Dave yesterday. It was a 5-minute call and it turned into a 30-odd minute call because he was telling me about this client case scenario and all the research he'd been doing. And Dave worked with complex cancer situations of all natures. Like he kind of, it sounds like the wrong word to use, but he thrives off the complex nature of what he's dealing with because he gets to learn so much from one client situation. Not in a way that it tests him, but it's like a new challenge for him to understand kind of the case study that's in front of him. So as far as like variation goes, it's almost like, you know, geez, if you had a portfolio of 10 different clients, and as Cole said, you're looking at them not as in, holy shit, this is a lot of complex stuff in front of me. It's more, okay, what can I do? If you're then able to progress those 10 client scenarios in a lockdown, in a COVID situation with a new virus, blah, blah, blah. Imagine, you know, I don't want to sound cheesy, but imagine how empowered you would feel as a coach, taking them to the next stage. And then other kind of future cases that come at you will seem like much simpler by comparison. So it's kind of for people that wouldn't necessarily work with these groups, it's like an interesting new route for them to explore. But there's definitely we've got certain characters, I think, where this is very much plays to what they enjoy in terms of reading around their profession a little bit, if you get me.
I can resonate with that in a sense of, like, I was thinking back, we had a laugh and a joke about courses and stuff like that before, but when I was constantly personal training and then investing into courses, when you went on, whether it was a faster course back in the day, Nick, which was functional therapy, and you come back and you screened people differently of how they move, and then the confidence that would give you within not only your facility, but the confidence that would give you with a client and how much more safe that you felt with a client, knowing that you had them in the locker compared to what you previously didn't have, was unreal. Now, put this on the scale of what we've got right now. Like, it's just immense. And obviously, from our side of things, if you've got the opportunity to tap into your course now, then in my opinion, every single PT should do it because it's there and they're going to hear about it more and more. Like, we work with PTs on a one-to-one basis where it's gone from, we've not heard nothing on the ground to over the past 3 months, oh, I've got 2 or 3 of my clients. They've gone down a bit. They've gone. It's just become more and more common.
Literally like overnight.
Yeah, same.
I've got it. Yeah, this person's got it. They're isolating.
It stalled them a little bit, hasn't it? And these are good coaches, don't get me wrong. And it stalled them to think, right, okay, well, I'll deal with that when they get back. But it's, and I'm coming on to my next question, it's the risk factor as that, because obviously, Cole, every single person will be different, clearly. But they're not just picking back up someone who's had a cough and cold in most cases. And the negative thing about this is that everyone's so emotionally invested into it, in my opinion, from personal trainers, people, general population, they've got their own opinion and view. That actually, what is that risk factor of a personal trainer taking on a client back from COVID? What is that risk factor if they don't treat them properly?
I think the main risk that you run is if you get them to do too much too soon. Mm. And I think as long as you recognize that, then you're putting yourself in a really safe category to operate and be effective. And that's my concern. That was our concern at the start, is that people would maybe make the error of going, okay, so you've no longer COVID, let's get some work done and get back to being fit. And that's not how you deal with anybody in a post-viral situation. Do remember that the vast majority of people will be in the safest category. So they're going to have little bits of post-viral fatigue. They might have low level kind of damage, I guess, to the alveoli. You know, most people are going to get away pretty well intact, but it still warrants doing your due diligence, being careful, taking your time, getting them through that critical period, and then kicking on. And then you've got this, like the more extreme cases. But in all instances, just start off really, really gradually. Don't overwhelm, don't assume nothing. The notion of, oh, it'll be all right because I used to do all this. I could at least talk you through a dozen scenarios of people I know who rated themselves as being really, really fit, have had COVID and gone, nah, I'm all right now. And going too hard too soon has pulled the wheels off the bus. and they are struggling because they've added to the damage. They've knocked themselves backwards and not propelled themselves forwards. So that's the key thing. It's just, you know, if someone is so kind of deconditioned and if someone's been so adversely affected and you can see that in them, your only priority is to refer them back. Yeah. So you need to speak to your GP. You know, this isn't normal. You know, you are clearly in quite a debilitated state. For everyone else, it's just going to be, and for the majority, it's just going to be gradually dealing with each kind of set of circumstances, managing them through, you know, knowing when to regress as well as when to progress and just steering them through. Moderation wins the day on this. And, you know, further to what you both alluded to, and certainly Mel, my attitude towards it is like, you know, the tougher the battle, the greater the victory. You know, there's far more at play here. So when we get this right, we've achieved far more, because without being sanctimonious, most of us get into this game because we want to help people to improve their lives or change their lives. And right now, the world's population needs their lives changing and improving and picking up and putting back on track. So it's a great time to be in it. It's a great time to be involved and play that role.
A couple of things on what you were both saying there as well. And I don't mean this to sound salesy in any way, because hopefully you guys get that we are not those people. Mm-hmm. But to Joanna's question before about diabetes/comorbidities and so on, I think a lot of, if you've not worked with people with certain conditions before, you'll get this from our program, but also it comes through in a lot of our YouTube stuff that obviously you can access for free. But the stuff in there, you'll naturally pick up methods, strategies, testing, approaches for working with people with conditions, because COVID is its own condition. So if that does feel kind of new, you'll start to pick up principles quite quickly. And then for our coaches who go through the Rebuild course, they also have access to another course that's under the same umbrella, that's all packed in. And for example, there's a diabetes module in there and there's a cancer module in there. So if you, the notion around that is also so that then if you are greeted with combination situations, that you can flit about between stuff. But aside from that, kind of also with the risk stuff and what Cole was talking about there, as much as possible, you know, similar to what you guys do, you know, Nick and Ant every day, is we'll get behind our coaches and help to instill in them the confidence that they need to be an authority on the topic without feeling that they're going beyond their scope of practice, but to encourage you guys that you do know and you are best positioned across the whole population to help these individuals kind of way beyond. And then just the other two things was within that, again, like we all do, like everybody who's dialed into this call, we breed like a sharing mentality. So we'll introduce coaches that live near each other. We introduce coaches that've got similar interests and similar specialisms, so that there's an opportunity for everybody to share their experiences and talk through case studies, so that, you know, you may not always want to talk to us, you might want to talk to your peers about that sort of stuff as well. And then lastly, another thing that is another theme that comes through in a lot of the stuff that Cole and I talk about is where you are a bit unsure, and Cole would speak to this way better than me, but just about developing that relationship with your local GP and your local health practitioners and stuff. We've had coaches that have had 22, 25 clients referred to them from the GP. But once you've started that dialogue, not only does it generally mean that you'll get clients signposted to you, but I've heard Cole talk about before, GPs, health practitioners, physiotherapists, and this is part of the work that Cole's doing now with Health Education England, is once that dialogue's open, they will welcome questions from you to better understand the more like a diabetic situation. And they'll support you and provide you with that information, which is then a win-win, because you learn more without having to trawl all over the internet. And then you're also likely to, you know, from a business end, get more clients out of it as well.
Yeah. It's almost going back 10, 15...
Yeah, 20.
Years or so, when you didn't have social media and Facebook and Instagram and all that crap, right? And to get out there and like meet and network and build this kind of network of people around you as a trainer.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things where it does come up quite a lot on the courses. It's like, how can I reach? And we've been talking about it quite a lot actually recently, about getting into your local environment and networking with and building that kind of team around you. Because, and especially now, and I was just thinking through this, through those conversations, then without being direct and kind of putting trainers down as such, but you're probably making yourself ill-prepared for the next 2 years if you don't address and look at this at this point in time. Do you know what I mean? In regards to dealing with, and from a perspective of keeping current clients and supporting them, let's be honest, when this does happen to X amount of clients. And also, I guess, when the gyms, we say this a lot recently, when the gyms do open again, it's that, well, how can I invite people back in and make them feel safe, you know, which we dealt with back in, you know, July and August, where it was what's happening, what's the new kind of regime with things, and now coming back in, more people are going to have been affected by it, and et cetera, et cetera. So I just think it's being ill-prepared if they don't take this as a serious kind of, not only due diligence, but also protecting their business as well, I guess, going forward. It's going to be a massive, massive thing, I think.
I think as well, just to add on to that, is you obviously, course isn't just about rebuild, is it? Obviously, you've got your other courses as well, like the Fortitude, and I've seen one of your personal trainers speaking so passionate about the kind of the cancer rehab side of it and so on. And it is, when you look at some of the stories behind it, it is massively inspiring and probably lights the fire into a lot of coaches of the reason why they come into the industry to, like you said, Carl, because we want to help people and want to change their lives. And there's always that reluctance to help them types, that type of demographic, because we're, like you said, we're scared to get hands-on with people like that. So obviously you guys aren't just about rebuild. It's far more than that when you're in the program, I'm sure as well. I've just got one more question on, but going back to rebuild, sorry, because I know other people will be thinking about it and no one's really asked it yet. Carl, this is for you. Obviously, we've got the vaccine, right? And obviously, that's going to play a huge role in hopefully getting us back to some level of normality. When you've got personal trainers probably out there thinking, right, well, actually, if we've got the vaccine, this is probably going to be done and it's out the way in October. So do I really need to know all of this if I only ever get one client who, do you know what I mean? And I can refer out. What are your thoughts in and around that?
We've got a vaccine. We haven't got a miracle. That's my thoughts. We've got a vaccine, not a miracle.
Yeah.
And whichever version of the vaccine that you look at, you know, the two top contenders are the Oxford AstraZeneca and the Pfizer vaccine currently in the UK. And there's two more that are commonly administered. They all deliver a kind of antibody effect that is kind of up to about 5 months. So it gets referred to as a seasonal vaccine, but the fact is one hit of a vaccine is never going to be enough. It's going to be something that people need to take. We've got the vaccine rollout. That's taking time. And as everyone's probably aware, it's taken longer than people planned. We've got to get through the winter. We're not even halfway through. So right now is what we call the flu ready season. And as you know, by looking at the daily figures, more and more people are getting it. Also, whilst the vaccine itself, depending on which one you have, the Oxford one in particular, attacks the shock protein, doesn't actually present any of the virus. The AstraZeneca one works a little bit differently. So people are, in the wake of it, having some low-level COVID-like kind of symptoms. I go to what we were discussing this morning. And I, you know, the meeting I was in this morning is with global leaders, you know, people who are represented at the World Health Organization, who lead health boards all across our world. Assume everybody will get it. That's the take home. Assume everyone will get it. That's the best way to brace for it. Now, don't get me wrong. Over time, we will get a better vaccine. This one, you know, particularly the Oxford one, in my opinion, is going to get looked at one day the same way we look at the moon landing. Incredible in what they've achieved. But we will get a better vaccine as more and more understanding comes through. But it's going to take time. You know, it's going to take time. Certainly, you have to expect that more and more people within the next minimum 18 months will just get COVID. You know, that's it. Also, and we've already seen it, people with antibodies are picking up a secondary infection. So even though they've got the antibodies, there are some people who are still able to catch it again. There's so much that is still being worked on to garnish a full understanding of how this virus functions and operates. So just work forward with the notion that everyone's going to get it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's more. There's already millions. I mean, in the UK alone, there's already over 3 million. I mean, if you have a look, on average, you know, just around about 7.2 million people in the UK engage with the health and fitness industry. And already over half of that amount of people, 3.5 approaching million people, have had COVID-19. We cater approximately for 12 to 14% of the population. 86 to 88% of the population don't really have anything to do with us. And yet the latest report that was shared by UK Active says that there's been 70% of people, when asked, have said that they've got a new interest in their health and what they can be doing to improve it. So right now, as a personal trainer, as a gym operator, as a coach, you should recognize all eyes are on you. And by helping to manage this and do this well, and I guess a little bit of changing the nature in how we represent our industry, there is a lock, stock, straight down the middle business opportunity. And I don't mean that in a brutal or blunt sense. It's a fact. Yeah, that's what we do. You know, it's no less noble just because someone's had that type of illness. It's just that's another set of situations that we can help people with.
Mm. And again, not to sound brutal or crass, but we did have one of our grad coaches the other day that said, "Hang about, there's almost 4 million people that have had this." Amazing. Like, as in, for him as a coach and someone who needs to expand his business, and, you know, he's kind of first grad out the gate, as it were. For him, not only does it tick a million boxes in terms of the fact why he got into the industry and him wanting to help people, but from an impact he could make perspective as well. But as Cole said, as a business opportunity, it's quite big when you look at it that way, sadly.
Yeah, it's huge. And I was just kind of sat here thinking, in a sense of, if personal trainers, and I've got loads more questions, but obviously we haven't got time for tons more, but if personal trainers do get this and aren't going on course for whatever reason, are you in a position now to refer into you guys, or where would they refer to find a coach who could deal with a client or an inquiry that is qualified with you to do so?
So, sorry, who's inquiring?
So, client comes in, a client inquires to a PT who's not qualified to kind of deal with this, and PT is not really comfortable to take this on. To take the client on, where could they refer to a local cause coach?
Got you. Cole, did you just say Mel?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. For right now, contact us. We keep, for every graduate, we have, tickle me. We have a registry of course graduates. So every graduate from every cert that we have gets listed on there, unless they say they don't want to. So we could tell you right now who's in Derby or Manchester or whatever. So yeah, absolutely. And of course we welcome that. You know, this isn't gonna be for everyone, so why not? Let's just collaborate where we can.
Real Nick. I've still got loads of questions, but we haven't got time. Have you got any more questions to ask? We've got one here that's in this chat.
I'll ask theirs then, mate.
So, Daniel, how long are you immune for after you've had the virus? I heard on the BBC News that it said 4 or 5 months, but not sure how true that is.
Yeah, that's dead right. 4 to 5 months is the kind of realistic expectation. Some people, 6 months is a maximum, but yeah, dead right. 4 to 5 months. And that's another part of the, goes back to the issue of how many people are going to get it, because there's already a backlog and a waiting list to get it. So when you reach your 5 months, it's not realistic at the minute to think I'll go back in and get a top up. You might have to wait another 2 months. So yeah, it's 4 to 5 months currently. And as I've said, no doubt that they will improve this and we will get better versions of the vaccine, but it's going to take time. It's going to take time.
Cool. Okay. All right. Mel, I'll put this on you because it's a bit more of a sales pitch. Because this, like, I've got so more questions I wanted to ask, but Just obviously regards to cars, we just mentioned, and we talked about it last week, there isn't just rebuild that's obviously from a COVID aspect. You guys have got other courses and that obviously the guys can access them courses. Do you want to speak in and around them other courses just so the PTs are aware that it's not just
the... Yeah, sure thing. And on the future questions, I know we've got some follow-up sessions and whatnot planned with us, but if it helps any, you can always ping some of those FAQs to us because, as you know, Colin and I... respond to FAQs and record it and stick it on YouTube, so we could absolutely do that if it helps anybody that's got follow-up questions. Kind of straight out the bat, out the door, I guess. So we provide content curriculum that's entirely based on feedback from coaches and clubs. So you guys tell us more about what it is that you feel is missing to help you succeed in your career, and we go out and largely because we've got Carl in the locker and the credible network that he's got, we're able to create some new and original courses. So access to a course membership costs as little as $32.50 ex VAT, and a little bit less than that if you're in this group because you get a little Dizzy code. Once you have access to your course membership, you get access to the rebuild course, which is the one that focuses on COVID. You also get access to Rebound, which is more around general coaching, sports science inspired programming and strategies for clients who are in lockdown, got one dumbbell at home, through to when you're back based in the gym and working as normal. And then Fortitude teaches you at least 16 weeks worth of hands-on practical one-to-one care, shall we say, with those vulnerable groups that we talked about before. So that covers diabetes, cancer, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, cystic fibrosis, and a stroke. So you'll get access to all three certifications for that $33.50, less dizzy. You can access it anywhere, anytime, in the bath, on the loo, in the gym, Sunday binge watch. And you can cancel at any time as well. So we have had coaches go through rebuild in a week or two, and then they cancel. So nail the course, £30, and you're all good. Just to add to that, though, and as you guys were just asking then about the vaccine, and obviously we have loads of questions about the new strain and stuff, we add to the content every month, dependent on feedback from learners, as well as what is occurring. So this month we've got going into rebuild, vaccine, new strain, reinfection and transmission, and then more around the business integration stuff of what we just talked about, like connecting with your GPs and that kind of stuff. So you would miss out on that, but there's nothing to say that you can't rejoin further down the line. We just wanted to give people kind of some practical options because money is tight for everyone in the world, and we didn't want that to mean that people couldn't access the information that they needed.
Brill, that answers Lydia's question, which is, when can I start the course? How long does it take? How long does it take comes up a lot, doesn't it? I suppose that's on the learner.
It is. And on average, it's 30 to 45 days, but we have had more recently kind of 14 days or 7 days. It can depend on how long you've been in the role, what experience you've had for this type of content. But also we've had some really new, fresh personal trainers who are trying to build up their business and trying to build up their experience and have got more time than maybe those who are back to back with clients who are smashing through in a week. So as you say, Anne, it completely depends on kind of the learner, really.
Okay. I think that's us just about done then, Nick. Listen, been great to have you on, Carl. It's been unreal to have you on. I feel like we've only just scratched the surface, and we probably could have spoken all day or threw questions at you all day, should I say. So it's been brilliant. So thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you.
Both utter legends for what you're doing. And the industry is going to be a better off for it. I 100% know that. So that'll be amazing to get you back on at some point soon, but definitely get one of your coaches on so these personal trainers can throw some more questions their way at that level. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
100%. Thanks for having us, guys. Bye-bye. Stay safe, everyone.